Thank you again for joining us for this, our 14th Garden Life show. Garden Life is a gardening for as an antidote for the world today, a way to honor and embrace our Mother Earth, nourish and restore our families, and a tonic for our community. This pre-recorded episode is entitled The Herbal Life, and we're going to talk about all things herbal. It even smells like herbs here in the studio. Do you have a favorite herb, Julie Calamine, my co-host? And my name is Julie Prochinski, but
yes,
to Julie.
I am Julie Calamine. And, you know, this is going to, we're going to come back around to this with Christina when we introduce her, because we have some questions, Julie.
Yes, we do.
So I'm going to name three favorite herbs, but I'm not sure if they're all herbs. That's where the questions will come in. So I'm going to start with basil. Love it. It's so wonderful in the season. So much you can do with it. Rosemary, because it hangs around. You can bring it in, and it's so great for the winter foods. Chives, who doesn't love chives? But, Julie, I know which one is your favorite, and we're smelling it in the studio.
That's right. Christina Bauer, owner of Untamed Alchemy, brought us in some lavender lotion, and we all are enjoying it and loving it.
Yeah, if we get so relaxed that we can't talk anymore, you'll know what happened.
It's the lavender, which is my favorite herb. Mm-hmm. So now's the time to introduce Christina. Christina Bauer, she is the owner with her husband, Zach, of Untamed Alchemy in Sagal. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Why don't you introduce yourself and give us a little information about your journey to herbs.
Well, I started, like a lot of young people, with the magic of my grandmother's farm. My grandmother happened to live in Denmark, and I was otherwise growing up in a place in Southern California that wasn't very green and wasn't very lush. And those summers for me were pure magic. Her garden was full of fresh herbs. Half of the things we ate and drank were things sourced from the back of her home. And I came away with this sense that there was magic and medicine right outside the door. And I kind of was looking for it ever since I left home at 18 to recreate that very same magic.
Wow. Is that giving you goosebumps? Just did it to me. That's
wow.
So great.
Wow. What a fabulous childhood.
Yeah, it was lovely. Lovely.
So when we met at the farmer's market, mm-hmm. and I spoke to you about herbs and things, and you said to me that you're a gardener, mm-hmm. an herbalist, mm-hmm. a distiller. Yep. A formulator, aromatherapist, teacher, and there were even a couple more things on the webpage that aren't even included in that. What a perfect outline for our talk today. So let's just begin with the garden. Your garden is called a biodynamic inspired homestead.
Yes. We call it biodynamically inspired because biodynamics is actually a really complicated system. It's something that was begun by Rudolf Steiner. It has some pretty strict rules and very formal processes. We call ourselves biodynamic inspired because a true biodynamic homestead is one that's self-sufficient. We are not, but we have adopted the perspective that biodynamics embraces, that our farm is a living thing and that each thing on that farm should be contributing, participating, and in some way kind of raising the farm up. So trying to find balance with all of that was what we were looking for. And then I do look to some of biodynamic strengths for timing of like when to plant certain things so I can get some advantages about whether I'm getting better flowers, better seed, that kind of thing.
Sure. It is a complicated system. Mm-hmm. It entails the entire homestead, not just the garden.
Yeah, correct. Yes. Including every living creature and every plant on it.
Right. And Five Elements Farm, is that also the name of your farm?
Yeah, Five Element Farm came about because I really wanted to celebrate the elements that are at the base of everything, earth, air, fire, and water. That fifth element being sort of the ineffable, whether you call it spirit or love or God. Those were the things that we had our hands in as we were building the farm. So it seemed like a logical name of a way to incorporate everything.
Ineffable. I'm getting goosebumps again.
So your Denmark grandmother, was she just into herbs or all vegetables?
You know, I think it was mostly herbs with her. She had a lovely vegetable garden. But the thing that I remember is I came over there every time having flown from California. So I'd get off an airplane, I'd be incredibly jet lagged and really kind of shaken. And instead of offering me a medication or anything else, it was always a glass of warm milk with honey that had been infused with chamomile. And every time I had it, the jet lag was done. And that kind of, there was something so tender about that cup of milk. You know, those kinds of memories were really important. California was fast paced and not a lot of room for being a kid there. Those little cups of joy were just, they were a perfect medicine.
Now I'm getting goosebumps. That's fantastic. So an herbalist. Now we know why herbs. Mm-hmm. How did you discover your favorite herbs, though?
You know, it has everything to do with, I think they found me. A couple of them are ones that grow in our backyard on our farm, and I don't think I could keep them away if I wanted to. St. John's wort, yes. Yarrow, you know, I mean, they're all over the place. So they've become favorites because I'm in relationship with them all year. And so I feel like I can look at one of those plants and have a sense of where I am in my seasons. And I know their medicine well enough now that the relationship feels really powerful and strong. But I started on a real roundabout way. I found essential oils first because they came up in conjunction with some soap making I was doing in college. I took a Mother Earth chemistry class so that I could make a bunch of things from scratch. And honestly, I think that professor was the guy who undid me. I mean, I've been on a learning journey with it ever since. But the first time I smelled an essential oil, I was undone. I smelled something from the tropics, a place I'd never been, and I was transported. And so at that point, I think the mystery of it was just, I was already caught up. I came back to herbs only when I had my own land. It was only when I had a place and a garden, and it was the garden that was my undoing there. My garden is, you know, such a source of joy that I can't help but have one anymore. So now, you know, the love affair is with the moment that it offers, not just an individual plant.
Wow.
That's so poetic.
It's beautiful. It's great. It really is. So let's talk about growing and harvesting. Now, these are cultivated herbs usually, or are they wild? Or
we're super fortunate in North Idaho. We are surrounded by medicine. So I use a lot of what's around us. I will say that I do so very conscientiously because I try not to, I don't wildcraft for production. I don't feel like I can go out for my business and collect, but all of us in North Idaho have conifers that are fantastic antimicrobials, antibacterials. We have an array of plants and flowers that come through. We've talked about yarrow, St. John's wort. So just being able to kind of move around throughout the year, there's almost always something you can get involved with. Plantain, you know, so much happening all the time. So I tend to be responding to what's around me, you know, what season is it in, what's it's asking me for now, with the things that are natural. So St. John's wort, where it comes up, yarrow, where it comes up. And then I have the things that I cultivate that I have to watch very closely, the annuals that want a lot of love and attention. And sometimes they'll go crazy. Like this year I have calendula that honestly, it's still going and I'm tired. Kind of like, yes, for it to take a break now.
Oh, we love calendula, but it brings me back to the question of what is an herb? Is it flowers? Is it woody plants?
You know,
what is it?
I've heard it described as an herb is any plant that someone has designed a use for, that has a purpose. You've mentioned it in your own notes. I really think that an herb technically is any plant with which you've created intention and some sort of relationship and engagement that can be applied for medicine. And that may be, you know, that it is, it may be psychic, that it's just a piece of joy that you've got a flower behind your ear. Mm-hmm. And it may be a deep medicine associated with, you know, some sort of real healing, whether it's healing scar tissue, whether it's, you know, in cancer treatments, which are, you know, out of scope of most folks working at home, but definitely something that's in scope of what herbs can do.
Sure. And culinary.
Yeah.
We can't forget using them for baking and cooking.
Yeah. Well, for me, food is medicine too.
Sure.
So that counts as well.
That's the medicine.
The fresher and the cleaner and the more local that food can be, then I think the more we're all thriving.
So do you wait till the herbs themselves are mature and then you harvest? Or at what stage do you harvest for the most oils in the plants?
Well, that's one of the things that's interesting, is it's different for every plant.
Okay.
And it depends on what you are either distilling for or what you're using it for. So St. John's wort, for my purposes, has a really narrow window. And it's right about where it got its name. It's right around St. John's Day, which is right around summer solstice. It tends to be at its peak. And you can tell when you squish those little flowers and you get a red, almost like a red coloring, uh-huh, on your fingers. That's the hypericin. That's one of the most important constituents in it. That's the one you want at its peak when you're infusing that oil. Now, if I'm going to instead distill for the essential oil, I actually want it at a different time. I'm going to want it at it because it's something else is going to come over. And the same is true, for example, lemon balm. If I'm using lemon balm for a tincture, I want it at a different point in its cycle because different constituents come over. If I'm distilling it, I want it pre-flower because then it's going to be cleaner in this in the specific constituents that I want. But to me, that's exactly what makes it kind of exciting, is that I'm not a bull in a china shop any longer. In some ways, the discovery of what is this plant asking, to me, that's part of the alchemy of it, is I have no business messing with that plant unless I can elevate that plant and do something better with it than it would have done if I had never interfered with it. That's important to me.
Wow, there's a lot too. Gathering herbs and getting the best out of them.
We're getting into chemistry here.
I think
with the distilling and the infusing, let's talk about those two different processes and any other processes that you might use to bring the herbs out.
Well, there's a host. So we can talk about dried herbs for tea.
Okay.
So many of the herbs are absolutely fantastic for tea. No fancy process, no fancy equipment required. A simple dehydrator will work.
Perfect. Let's start with simple and work our way up.
Yeah, exactly. You've got a super simple. Infusions are also really, really easy. Taking the whole flower or the appropriate plant part and infusing that in an oil. The key there with each of those is going to be knowing the details about the plant that you're working with and what it likes the best. So there are some plants that want to be infused or tinctured in alcohol because the constituents you want that are really important in that plant come over best with alcohol.
Okay.
Others are going to come over best in water. And so it's the water-loving constituents that come over. So really, you've got all these options. Which one is the best for the plant that we're talking about is going to be unique to the plant that we're talking about and how you want to use it. But broadly, there's tea, you've got tinctures, you've got the infused oils. You can distill the plant, which can yield the essential oils, which are an extremely concentrated version of all of the volatile molecules that come over on the what we call the fat-loving or lipophilic side. And then you have that gorgeous botanical water, the hydrosol, that is the water from that living plant. And
that's what bleeds off the distilling process?
Yeah. So when you distill, and we distill in copper alembic stills.
Okay.
And we place our plant material either in the pot or in the pot and the column or the column. So it's either being, it's either coming over via steam that's moving through the plant or steam that is around the plant, the boiled water coming over. When it cools in the condenser, it separates into the two parts. It separates into the oil part and the water part. And that water is as important to me as anything else. A lot of essential oil lovers don't realize just how much hydrosol is produced when you make many essential oils and how much of it is wasted.
Oh boy.
And that's the part that I really don't love. And that's one of the things that's why I got into making my formulas, is being able to work with the hydrosols was, to me, that opened up everything. Because all of a sudden, working with infused oils, working with hydrosols, working with the waters, I could put all of those things together. So, for example, the lavender lotion I brought in today, it has lavender hydrosol, lavender essential oil, and lavender infused oil.
And if I understand you correctly, then different elements or constituents, as you say, from the plant can come back into your product.
That's exactly right.
You get more out of it.
Yeah. And so for me, the ideal thing is if I can use a calendula hydrosol and a calendula infused oil, suddenly I'm bringing more of what that plant offers to bear in the thing that I'm ultimately making.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why the formulas are on that extreme end of what can we do, is because they're a lot more complicated. Making a lotion is a lot more complicated than a tea at the front end. But there are still so many things available to all of us at home, whether it's a simple tincture, a glycerite tincture. There's lots we can be doing with our plants on the daily, including, you know, eating them.
Right.
Well, you've mentioned easy things we can get going with teas, you know, et cetera. If a person were wanting to start to learn to do something like a lotion, where do you get started? I mean, how did you, were you just experimenting? Did you have a mentor?
You know, I was lucky because I had a golden parachute from a career that I put a lot into. And the minute I got it, I went face first into education. So I studied with a well-known institute for aromatherapy, started there. Formulation was a small piece of it. It was a little sort of a hint of this is what it could become. So started with salves, which really are anyone can make a salve. I mean, it's one of the easiest things in the world with a simple infused oil, beeswax, the right ratio, a few essential oils, and you're ready to go. Formulation, where you start blending oils and waters and you're making them safe, where that water won't be compromised by bacteria or mold or yeast, that's a whole other thing. And for me, that came about because I just wanted to be able to share the hydrosols I was making in a way that lifted them up, and lotions were the perfect way. So I found quite a few resources online. I'm happy to share them with you guys if you have links or something you want to, you know, share with your listeners. But I just sought out people across the field that were engaging with plants in thoughtful ways that I was curious about, and I just sort of never stopped.
Julie and I are just looking at each other like, wow. It's great.
This is so great, Christina. I can't get over it. So I was reading about herbs, and they used to be called simples. And I discovered that simples is when herbalists took one herb, just like you've been talking about, and learned all these different ways to bring those characters out of that herb and their uses. And that's exactly what you're talking about.
Herbal simples.
The simples.
Yeah, the simples are the medicines that consist of just the one herb.
Just the one herb.
And the joy of simples for any herbalist is having a full cabinet of lots of them and knowing what each of them do. But what I'll tell you is someone who spent, honestly, an embarrassing, I mean, it's truly shameful, truly shameful the amount of money I spent when I was first getting into all of this on exotic oils and things that came from really far away, stuff I had never smelled that I didn't really even know I had an affinity for. Going deep in one relationship with one oil and one plant has been much more meaningful and rewarding for me in terms of both medicine and in terms of education than anything else. The actual, like, going out each day and, you know, seeing the plants and recognizing those plants and working with those plants has been, that's been the most transformational piece for me.
Wow. You know, we're talking about aromatherapies. We're talking about things like lotions that we put on our skin. We have herbs that we eat. And there are all so many herbs that are available to us. How does a person begin understanding which herbs are the ones they, I mean, I understand the ones I enjoy, but yeah, are there ones that we need and don't know it? How do we learn about that?
Well, I think it starts with a listening relationship, you know, of like listening first and foremost to your own body of, you know, what are you noticing? And then being honest with your answers about what is that telling you about what you need? So I have a lot of folks who inevitably they got a lot of stress. It seems to be, you know, a constant. Asking people to start with, you know, reducing their stress instead of adding a different routine for skincare is like a great first step. But the key is, I think, for one thing, having a community of people, whether it's farmers or growers or makers or blenders that can help you to be in conversation. But first listening to what it is your body's asking you for, and then sort of asking for that help, whether it's looking for an herbarium that can inform, you know, these are my concerns. I run hot, you know, I run cold and I need something warming for my muscles. There's lots of ways to seek the herbs out in those ways. The thing that I always encourage people to do is try to figure out what's the thing that's really close to you. That's because, you know, frankincense comes from a war-torn country really, really far away. And there's quite a bit of consequence to engaging with it. But we have gorgeous plants and medicines right here, many of which do the very same thing in terms of clearing the chest and opening the breath. And so things like that, I always want to say, well, you know, what's local? And it may begin with, ask somebody you know who knows. And if you don't know someone who knows, find somebody who knows. Most of us can't stop talking about it, as you can probably already tell.
Yeah, I think we just found one, Julie. Yes. Well, I have another question. You know, you're saying listen to yourself or know yourself. Are there some herbs or tinctures that might challenge us, but we need to keep going with them that we might originally find distasteful, or we're like, no, I don't know about that one. And they grow on us? Does that happen?
Always. I mean, inevitably, one of the joys of bitters, which are one of my favorite medicines, is everybody's like, it's really bitter. I don't really want to take this. Many of them can be really sour, can be really distasteful. For something like a tincture, you can mix it with honey. That's what I always tell people to do with fire cider if they can't handle it and they want it as straight as possible. Mm-hmm. There's ways to sweeten the deal. But the key is to find the delivery mechanism that you can stay with so that you can continue to get the medicine. Maybe that's a delicious tea. If the tea isn't delicious, then it's time to figure out the other way. There comes a point at which if it's really, really awful, you can always try the capsule version of something. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, knowing what works for you is the key of like, you know, I can get something down if I think it's really helping me, but I can appreciate why people can't necessarily.
The point of asking yourself what you need, I think, is well taken, because that's probably where it starts. Mm-hmm. What is happening? Are you tired in the afternoon? Are you disinterested? Are you catching colds all the time? You know, what is it that's mm-hmm. happening with you?
Yeah.
And are all herbs... would you say mostly they can be taken ingested, or are there herbs that shouldn't be taken?
Absolutely, there are herbs that shouldn't be ingested.
Okay.
And there are some that can be ingested, you know, after they've been processed a certain way. Others are preferred in certain ways. The key with any herb you're about to work with is to look it up.
Right.
I mean, it's absolutely
Find
imperative.
Out.
Yeah. And, you know, one of my herbal mentors is a woman by the name of Jean Rose, and she's been in the field for many, many years. And she always says, know what you grow. And for me, that extends beyond just what I'm growing into, you know, if you're working with something, particularly if you're engaging it for healing, you have to be clear about what you're working with and what its risks are. And that includes things like, is it endangered? Maybe there's no risk to the human body, mm-hmm. but perhaps it's not so sustainable for us to be going out and harvesting it as we often do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And an example that just came to mind immediately was ginseng,
yes.
because that's been over-harvested mm-hmm. like crazy.
Yes. Yeah.
And Taxus. I think of Taxus with the chemo mm-hmm. treatment.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Montana, that's mm-hmm. been
well
harvested.
I don't find any ginseng any longer in North Idaho. I haven't seen it in a really long time. And I see people, you know, it's true for anything that comes from nature. Sometimes access equals excess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who have easy access to it will take more than what is really a fair share. And I think remembering reciprocity, that, you know, the gift is given to us, but we have to give the gift back. We're never the only person walking through a forest. We're never the only creature relying on that environment. So it's important for us to be in balance.
Very good. And along that same point, herbs aren't always, they can react with other things that you're taking and other things.
Absolutely.
I'm really glad doctors now ask, are you on any herbs? Mm-hmm. What vitamins or herbs are you on? Because mm-hmm. that plays into our health.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the fact is, if you recognize that they have the power to heal, you have to also recognize they have the power to harm.
Absolutely.
And used irresponsibly, that's always going to be the case. It is entirely possible to seek herbal support where you already have some pharmaceutical engagement, where that herbal support can interfere, like you say, with mm-hmm. with outcomes. And that's obviously, that's not safe. At the moment that we're talking about anything that is a chronic issue, that's a real threat, you need to have a healthcare professional involved, and you need to be talking to an herbalist who's interested in your outcomes, not in getting paid.
Right.
Because anytime that it's about for profit, it's a problem. That said, you also have to respect that, you know, people's time is valuable. I often have to tell people, I studied a really long time, I can't be on the phone all day answering questions. That said, most of us are going to be happy to point to resources that people can use to be able to find what they
Great.
Need to know to be safe.
Great.
Because that's key. You know, effective is only good if it's also got safe.
I do have to ask, what was your first product that really sent you down this road to Untamed Alchemy business, your lotion business?
Well, besides the other job ending, you know, besides the one thing stopping, we had a little farm in Santa Fe where we were living. And I just, every single time I went out there, I just kept looking at everything and thinking what it could become. And I'm pretty sure the first thing that counts as a real product was probably a salve. That was the thing that was like, okay, it was when I had made something that was effective, where someone was like, hey, this actually fixed the problem that I had, and it was a real problem. That was powerful. The really big one was making my first lotion. I did that in a class. And the first time that I watched the oils and waters come together and then become this thick, creamy, I was beside myself. I was like, oh my gosh, my plants could be this. And the first time you work with like a lavender hydrosol or a rose hydrosol, I mean, I have the best smelling workspace
yes.
in the world. And I'm often kind of delirious and floating when I get back home because I've just been, you know, surrounded by these great smells all day. But the lotions are, for me, it's the easiest way to bring together the water, the infused oil, and the essential oil, all of which I'm able to create on my farm. And for me, that just feels like that's part of what I'm here to do.
Wow.
Yeah. Is make magic with that.
Well, as you all know, this is a community radio, and so we don't do commercials, but I just had another little squirt of this lotion, and I might float away with lavender lotion. It's really something else. I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Something else.
Take us through, Christina, your testing process. When you develop something, what's the next step? And then when does it get produced?
Well, I throw it at everybody I know that likes me and say, what do you think? So I'm asking for a lot of opinions from folks. Inevitably, I go through a few iterations of it. You know, so you'll make a few subtle changes with the formula until you think it's right. But the thing that takes the longest is doing all of the stability testing and the product testing to make sure that it's safe. So I have to make sure that it's stable for the customers that buy it, that it's got a decent shelf life, that it's not been exposed to anything that carries any risk. And it can take a long time. If you don't have, there's a little oven that, you know, helps to move the thing along. It can be anywhere from a 6 to 12 month process.
Wow.
I mean, the fastest I've done anything was 6 months, and I was working with a recipe that I was pretty solid on when I started. But it takes a little while to kind of get all the way.
Mm-hmm. Serious business.
Yeah, it is. And I will say, I talk to tons of folks at the farmers market, which I love. And I love hearing from people that tell me that they make things and they do things. And every time I have this thrill, and I also have this slight shudder of, I hope someone taught you about when you work with water-based products that you need to protect those products to keep them safe. Because I've been gifted some things where I was like, ooh, no, that's totally not safe.
Well, which does lead to the question, how does one look for safe products in this kind of business?
Well, you need to be sure, among other things, that everything you're working with has water in it has been preserved accordingly. Ideally, even oil-based products are going to have preservatives in, even if it's just an antioxidant to prevent the oils from going rancid and slow that process down a little bit.
So how do we know? How do we ask the right questions or read the right?
Any supplier should be including an ingredient list that should be as transparent as possible. And if you can't understand it, they should be able to explain what it says and defend it for you. If it's all in the Latin binomials, someone should be able to walk you through. And if it says something like cetyl alcohol, they should be able to tell you what it's sourced from, because they come from different places. You know, some of the emulsifying waxes we use are, some of them include palm, some don't. I personally work with palm free, but for a lot of people that kind of thing matters. So in some ways it's just about asking the right questions, about saying, you know, understanding where you're sourcing your ingredients, so that you know that they're premium, preferably organic, certainly grown without the use of pesticides. And then that whoever has formulated that has gone to the trouble of recognizing there are natural preservatives you can use, and that they're not afraid to use them, because it's much more terrifying to not have that in there than it is to have a product that is shelf stable. I'm not interested in my lotion lasting for 3 years, but it's really important that it have, you know, a reasonable time that folks can enjoy it before something turns.
Right, right.
And which also makes me think, don't buy too much at one time.
Exactly.
Buy what you can use, because lotions can become old and smell wrong.
Absolutely.
And
so can essential oils.
Yes.
And same with
all
tinctures.
Herbs.
Exactly. And in some ways, that's one of the beautiful things about if you're engaging things one-to-one, you're making, you know, an 8-ounce tincture or a 4-ounce glycerite, you're not making more than you need for your own family's wellness. And you're not neither taking too much, nor are you wasting, and you're getting the freshest, cleanest medicine. That's key.
Wow. Just make a batch at a time.
Mm-hmm.
No big batches. So why, you know, we talked about aromatherapy.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think scents are so important?
Well, I think more than anything, we as human beings have evolved alongside plants. They were here before us, and everything that makes us the animal that we are has evolved in relationship to responding to scents. So we recognize scents as literally, viscerally, as this is safe, this is not safe. There's a reason we react the way that we do when something smells rotten. That's our body system warning us, danger, danger, this is not safe for you. But the other thing about it is that it's directly linked to our emotions. It bypasses the limbic brain, so it doesn't go through the part of our brain that sorts things out. So what we experience from scent is much more like raw emotion and raw instinct feeling. And because it is so closely associated with memory, it also has the ability to kind of take us out of where we are, take us out of a moment. It can take us to a place we've never been. Just imagining that gorgeous, my first scent that I smelled was ylang ylang, which is a tropical flower that, believe me, was not growing around the places that I was hanging out. But I was somewhere far, far away in this lush jungle when I smelled it. And that's one of the things that I think is so interesting about scents, is that they kind of capture you. They have an effect on us that we can't interrupt, and we kind of can't be too logical about right away. It has a way of seizing us that we respond to. And I think it's just how we're hardwired, because yes, plants are a part of the environment we grew up in, and we've only gotten farther away from them, not closer.
It is a visceral response, and probably warm milk to you brings back.
Oh, yeah.
Those,
oh, yeah. I mean, at this
too.
Point, warm milk and honey with a little bit of chamomile in it, and I feel loved. I mean, it's like a cup of love for me. It feels like a cup of caring.
Wow.
But that's true. I mean, I think any of us that had the experience of having people around us who made us medicines in the hopes of, you know, lifting us up or healing us, there was more than the herbs in the cup. You know, there's usually a little bit of love in there, too.
That's right.
That's one of the joys about, you know, engaging things one-to-one, is that your intention can go in there for your family, for the people that you're sharing it with. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very true. Julie, do you have any scents that bring you back to something that is a sweet memory? Or maybe sweet, not a sweet one.
I grew up on a pig farm, and when I get off the plane in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, I smell home.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Not quite what you were looking for, but...
That's
still
good.
The same. It's a
visceral. It may be the reason you like lavender, because do you know lavender? One of the parts of its history is that it was beloved in France, near to where they were doing incredibly smelly work. They were tanning leather.
Oh boy!
And so everybody knew lavender was the smell of soap, because it was the scent they used to overcome all of the smell of the tanning leather.
Okay.
Yeah. So your instincts are good on liking lavender.
The strength of it too, for sure.
Yeah.
And also the thing that I found, too, is that as Julie and I have learned, you are a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Are you teaching any classes? Is anything in your future as far as offerings to us?
Yeah, I do have one of the things I love to do is share distillation experiences with people. The process of distillation is true ancient alchemy. It is the process of, you know, collecting those plants, preparing those plants for distillation, seeing how it transforms from water and solids over to this gorgeous hydrosol, and then the essential oil that is so, so fragrant and so, so breathtaking. I love sharing that with folks. So inevitably, I will be doing probably a grand fir distillation experience in December. We'll have a holiday bazaar where we sell some of the products. And by then I should know when we're going to be doing workshops in 2024. We've
Great.
Moved to the lab. But what I enjoy more than anything is getting people out into the garden where they can meet the medicine and then come back inside and create something with it that, you know, can introduce them to the benefits of that plant and hopefully get them out in their garden in relationship with it in a new way, too. So,
wow. And are the general benefits of these herbs mostly the same for everyone? I mean, is there like a category?
Oh my gosh, no. No, so they have, it has so much to do. I mean, there's a distinct right brain side to this, where there's chemical constituents that are demonstrated to have certain benefits. And there's research that shows what types of constituents, so monoterpenes behave in a way, sesquiterpenes behave in a way. There's that side of things where there's lots of categories. So we think of some remedies as heart remedies, some as because they're cardiovascular, they impact this system. Some have angiolytic or nerve relieving properties. There's lots of big categories in which every the constituents may play a part. Lots of different things will contribute to it. But there's also this sort of experience of what we call the doctrine of signatures, where when you look at a plant, the shape of the plant will actually give you some insight into its medicine. So one of the great things that people always use as the example is a walnut. A walnut, when you crack it open, looks like a brain. It's considered one of the best brain foods with some of the best fatty acids for brain function in the world. So little things like that, there's the experience of the herbalists that have been handling these things for years that may not have been proven, but it has a legacy to it. When those two come together, you have so much information that it's almost more for every herb than you can digest. What I say to people is begin by, you know, learning what is this herb's magic and in different ways. So what does the flower offer? So in my own garden, I have calendula because of its gorgeous skin healing properties. It's a deeply resinous flower that has a lot of benefits to it. And I love that it's so, so gentle. Chamomile, fantastic anti-inflammatory. It is really good at reducing energetic heat in the body. If you have inflammation, if you have irritation or sensitivities, it's a beautiful, beautiful herb. Peppermints are, you know, a whole other category over here doing something different with those. In every case, it's really about what is it, you know, like where can I begin and what can I know about this? So if you know what you're looking for example, I want a heart tonic. You know, my heart races and I have panic attacks and I'm not at the level where I need to be talking to my doctor, or maybe I've spoken to him and he's suggesting I relax. There are ways in which you can find some of the medicines that grow locally that make wonderful syrups or tinctures. I won't suggest what they are because it's dependent upon the individual and I don't want to point someone in the wrong direction. But there are so many things that grow right around us that are huge medicines for that. But the fact is, if it's a pharmaceutical, if it's a benefit of a pharmaceutical, there's probably a plant that can do it. Mm-hmm. If it's anti-inflammatory, if it's a relaxing nervine, if it's a tonic to the heart, if it is, you know, if it's a fever reducer, if it increases sweat, there are so many, you know, anti-nausea, so many things that the plants can do that it really is about start with where you are and what you need and invite the plants that, you know, can be in healing relationship with you to kind of show up. And it may be that there's a little bit of discovery that has to happen on your part, you know, some questions, but There's probably one closer than you think, probably one right here in the panhandle.
Yes, so we can get some ideas from general categories, but it's very experiential, it's individual.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, the conifers here are absolutely amazing for the wintertime. I mean, I can't say enough about just putting a bough on your stove is a great way to introduce, you know, delicious smells and freshness to the space, so.
Wow, we've covered a lot.
My gosh, so Christina.
Yeah.
Give us your contact information. Let us know about your website and that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, so the business is Untamed Alchemy. We can be found at untamedalchemy.com. We don't do much on social media because we're usually out in the gardens or by the stills. But you can always find us. You can always call me at 208-304-6054. I'm happy to answer questions folks have about the products and also to point them to some of the many other herbal teachers that are up here. There are a lot of wonderful people engaging the medicine of North Idaho with their community, and I'm just one of them.
That is so great. Well, thank you so much for coming in. Yeah. I can't believe I scored. I was telling
You're
Julie
so sweet.
That herbs are like magic to me, and then finding you at the farmer's market and now getting to talk about herbs, I'm just thrilled.
Total
Thank
serendipity.
You so much it's, for coming in.
It's been my pleasure to be here with you, ladies. Thank you so much.
All right. We are KRFY 88.5. This is the Garden Life Show, our once-a-month feature. I'm Julie Perchinsky here with Julie Calamine, and thank you all for listening.